week on the Koshcast. Manchester City get handed a title, ironically by the son of a wealthy aristocrat. Arsenal are like a five-year-old on the first play date, struggling away from home. Like L'Oreal's reputation, Chelsea get saved by a beautiful Frenchman, and Liverpool reach 300 pops under Klopp. We'll preview the semi-finals, but also take a look back at the Champions League, as not for the first time, the Romans conquered the Spanish, and it was also not the first time a senior citizen has lost their marbles as Real Madrid edged past Juventus and Buffon had a meltdown. Elsewhere, we ask whether Toronto FC can achieve against Chivas, or whether it will be too hard against Guadalajara, and as always, a quiz and Moomoo of the Week top it off. All this, and a special guest joins us too. What more do you want? Hello and welcome to another episode of the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex, Bernie is here.
Hello.
Mohamed is here.
Hello.
And joining us for the second time, very special guest, Daniel Rouse of The Score and of multiple Under the Kosh Trivia Championship fame.
I won't go that far. I feel like I got beaten in a bit of face-off last time.
That is true. You were beaten, but you have won it twice before, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, yeah.
Third time finalist, two out of three. I'll take that.
Yeah, there you go. Not quite as good as City though. They've won it three times, and you will, as a City fan, be delighted to talk about that today, won't you?
Yeah, I'm feeling absolutely champion. I must say, walking over it was a bit soggy, but got splashed by a bus. Thought it was hilarious, didn't care. Went to Winners, it was really busy, and like none of the t-shirts were flowery enough for me. It was just, life is just wonderful right now.
But getting splashed by a bus on a soggy Monday afternoon is a pretty traditional English experience anyway. So
yeah, I mean, if anything, it just proves that you could perform on a Tuesday at Stoke. If anything, so.
Sure. Yeah, we'll go with that one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Anyway, right, let's start then. At Wembley, Spurs 1, Manchester City 3. It's put the wheels in motion for the title win, although little did we know that this would be enough, you know, when it happened. But Jesus with the opening goal, I mean, Spurs were defending suicidally high at the time, as they want to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, this game was pretty much once, this is the hardest game I think that City had left in their schedule, and once they won this one, I think that was pretty much it. I think everyone waited for, was thinking that it was going to be the week after where they really seal the title, but I thought Spurs, I don't know, with Kane back, I thought they might look more dangerous than they did. To be fair, City, yes, they had their wobbly moment, which is very similar because Spurs got their goal at the very end of the first half and then it got wobbly in the beginning of the second half. But overall, City played a really, really good game. Just very measured, very in control of pretty much the whole match against a very good Spurs team.
No, I'm with you. I thought City were going to go into this one and lose it. I really did. I just thought it. You know, everyone was downbeat. Some of the bigger players of the recent weeks, like, you know, Gundogan's been great most of the season, but he's been completely lost in recent weeks. And they went out there and they really went at them. And I think there's a little, you know, lack of credit for company's ball for the first goal. I do think it was a great ball. And I think if anyone was really at fault, Hugo Lloris could have been off his line a little bit quicker. But overall, I think City...
He was later on.
Yes. But overall, I thought, you know, City really went at him from the off, and it was an incredible statement after what's been a disastrous, you know, 10 or so days before that.
I found that whole thing interesting, that people were saying that City would not perform well in this game, because look at the last three games. I guess that's what we're going on. First half against United, they were spectacular. Maybe even the best football that they played all season without their first, you know, a couple first-team players. I thought against Liverpool in the second leg, they were particularly good as well. One refereeing decision, maybe not going their way, whatever. Second half, they fell off. So the performances were there, kind of mixed up somewhere in there. So I didn't expect them to not play well against Spurs. It was more, right, could Spurs rise to the occasion? And I think... they've probably been found out relative to their competitors, realistically.
I also think that a lot of the kind of, will City screw this up, was slightly hopeful from a lot of people. Not that anyone really has a problem with City winning, like neutrals have a problem with City winning, but it would just be more fun. Like the season's over now, the title race is done, right, and it probably was already, but it was just like keeping that excitement extended for another couple of weeks.
Mm. Yeah. I don't think City, I think Bernie, you bring up a good point. I don't think City necessarily played much better than they've played in the games that they've lost. I think a big point is the refereeing decision in those games. I think a lot went against City. I think against Liverpool in the second leg, I think against United, certainly.
Oh, you felt they were completely robbed.
For sure. They were robbed against United. They were a little bit robbed of a comeback against Liverpool. That less so in that game. I just thought, for example, in this game, they got a call in their favor when Lloris fouled Sterling, which was, I think we agree, outside the box. Still
but
a very bad...
will tell he was close enough, might as well let it be a penalty.
Yeah. but Lloris, I think he's been at fault for a lot of goals recently for Spurs. He's been in a really bad run of form. I mean, he really needs to snap out of it before the World Cup because he also made a mistake for France in the friendly recently, and he's just not been having a good time. But again, I think City are just by far the best team in the country and one of the best teams statistically in the Premier League has ever seen. People always debate the Invincibles and the United 99, etc., etc., and even United 08 or whenever that those trio of Ronaldo, Tevez, and Berbatov and Rooney. And so, I mean, they've won... What, with 5 games to go? They almost did it with 7 games to go without the little wobble. So
what was the best record before that? Like, when has it been won earlier than this?
It was, United.
It levelled it, I think, with 5 matches to spare, yeah. I actually think, I do think you're a little bit generous with the assessment of City's previous games. I do think, there are a couple of odd referee calls, but City's second half performances were bordering on pathetic. So I think it's one hell of a response. And then, talking about the all-time Premier League teams, I actually wrote at work claiming that City are the all-time best Premier League team. And I do stand by that because you look, the ones I have as the ones that could compete with them, the 2004-2005 Chelsea team with Mourinho.
Yeah.
He put 3 in the centre of the field, outmanned people in the middle of the park with their 4-4-2s, and it worked incredibly. And then the 07-08 Man United team with Tevez, Ronaldo and Rooney up front. Absolutely fantastic. But just the innovations that Guardiola's been brought in.
The Invincibles weren't there.
No.
Okay.
Because because individually, amazing.
Yeah.
And also the scouting and the training that Arsene Wenger brought into the league, incredible, but it was still lodged into a 4-4-2. There was nothing there that really changed the landscape of English football. Whereas there's so many things that Guardiola has brought in that you could argue are the biggest changes tactically since Bill Nicholson's Tottenham team in the 1960s.
Go into that. I'm curious to what are those tactical innovations?
So a ball-playing goalkeeper. He persevered with that one. People would have really, really got concerned about that, after Claudio Bravo. He was a hologram last season. He was absolutely terrible. But he persevered, and Edison's been fantastic, arguably the second best goalkeeper in the league already. Inverted fullbacks, they weren't happening before.
That's true. Although it was abandoned after about 3 weeks.
Fabian Delph's been doing all season, though. You'll see when City go to the pitch,
argument's sake, I think the keeper one, I think that's a fantastic point. I mean, there have been quote-unquote ball-playing goalkeepers before, but not to this level.
I think possibly less part of the system.
The inverted fullbacks thing, Chelsea did it last year. Victor Moses was converted into an inverted fullback, in essence. To me, that's not really tactical innovation.
I don't know. I think Victor Moses was very, very wide last year. I think he was important for stretching the team. The channels were wide open then for whether it was Pedro or Willian on that side of the pitch. I think
he was a converted fullback rather than...
I think the one thing that Pep can stand behind is also the level of competition. I think now... I mean, I know this season the teams seem like they're off the pace, but that's, I think, mostly because City are just, blistering this league, so maybe that's part of it. But I think the competition now is also better than what maybe Arsenal had to face or United had to face in 99, in terms of it was pretty much
a two-horse race.
I know there's a lot of teams this season that have kind of fell off a little bit. Arsenal aren't really in that equation this season. United maybe, but again, not at full strength. So it's hard to pinpoint whether this is more competitive or less competitive.
I mean, let's if we're breaking it down. I can't believe you left the Invincibles out, but we'll as a United fan, to me that's weird. But we'll talk about that. I don't believe that we can make the argument that this is more competitive because people talk about how much people spend. But what makes a team competitive is how they play and the quality on the pitch. Mourinho's team came and usurped that Invincible team and Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United. The competition between those two teams was at its height, and to overtake those people in your first season, I think we're talking about the wrong conversation in terms of competition. And look at when the treble United team won. They had that Arsenal team that had just won the season before, and with all that revolution that Wenger brought in, and Chelsea. Let's not forget, Chelsea were so good with Hasselbank and Zola. Well, I think not sure if Zola was there. But there was 2 points difference in that league. And with that team that got to the quarterfinals of Champions League against Barcelona that year, I think we're having the wrong conversation when it comes to how competitive these teams are.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a debate. It's tough to... It just, I think with, like, what, 16 points difference, I think, between City and United or something like that, like, I don't know, I feel like a little bit more competition would have helped the argument in City's favor, if anything, I feel. Like, you know what I mean? When someone wins it by so much, you kind of almost think, well, maybe the competition wasn't that good, or is it that City were just incredible?
I mean, and you can replicate that. I heard someone saying that the other day about just an individual result. Like, if you see a team has won 6-0, you're like, well, the opposition was shit. If they won 4-0, it's kind of, it sounds almost more convincing. It's a little weird. But the other, like, moving on from the kind of relative kind of grandiosity debate, what I find interesting about this City team is that they've won the title with, I'm not going to say bad defenders, but it's not a good defence. And they've had no left back all season. Otamendi, Stones, Laporte's new. We don't really know too much about how well he will do at City. But Stones, Otamendi, company, no one would say that they are convinced by them as, like, elite centre backs. I would say, I mean, company on company, his day and when he's fit, he's fantastic. But how often is that? It's a handful of times a season. But it hasn't mattered because they've had the ball so much. And that to me, is friend.
I think Fernandinho counts as in that defence of City. And I think he's been one of the players of the season for me. I don't know.
No, I completely agree. I think he's very much an unsung hero. He does actually get involved in attacks quite a bit. He does have that little dash of Brazilian flair every now and then. Spots the ball going forward and stuff. But yeah, I mean, you don't get me started on Nicolas Otamendi. I think he's infuriating. But yeah, I think just the positional nous of Fernandinho, I think he's been massively, massively important. I actually think Kyle Walker's been overlooked an awful lot. I think he does bring width to the team, but also, I didn't really realise he did this when he was at Tottenham, but his crossfield balls are actually fantastic. Yeah. He's really unleashed Sané a few times this season. So I think, you know, Fernandinho and Kyle Walker would be the unsung heroes at defence, but otherwise this City story is one of attack, really.
And it's an interesting point you bring up about the defence, because, again, if you go back to the best teams argument, that 07-08 United team had the best defence in the world. Forget about England, literally in the world. So how do you talk about a team being balanced and best and all that? But in this season, people made a lot of noise about Mourinho and being defensive and being defensive master, forgetting that David De Gea has the most saves of any keeper almost in the league and in top six. The United defense has not actually played very well. And when you go down the list, City's defense, I do not believe is very good if you look at it from a defense, actual defending. Manchester United is not very good. Liverpool is not very good. Tottenham, I don't even know where to put them. They confuse me. And Chelsea have been bad as well. So it's been very, very poor defending overall. So the idea that you can win with attacking this season, it's par for the course, really.
Yeah, well, once you hit Arsenal in sixth and you have Mustafi at centre-back, I think that's when you really start with a defensive ability in the league. I mean, right there is your marker.
Well, under them are, you know, Dyche is Burnley, and they can actually defend. Yeah. The first team in the league can actually defend.
I think out of the top six, I think you'd have to say Tottenham are normally the best organised defence. I mean, the whole Alderweireld thing is a little bit odd.
Yeah.
Maybe they've been missing him a little bit. But yeah, all in all, it's been a pretty bad season defensively, but that makes it a really, really fun league to watch this season.
It does, but we've also seen that reflected in the Champions League. You can't just sit there and try and nick a 1-0 in the modern Champions League. You have to go and score goals, and we've seen that in the last couple of weeks too. But just on City, before we move on, Dan, how can they improve? What happens over the summer? What are there positions that can still be improved on? What do you think?
The number one priority will be a defensive midfielder, because Yaya Toure is out of contract. I mean, he never plays anyway, but he's out of contract. That's a big lot off the wage bill there. And Fernandinho turns 33 this May.
Really?
So that needs to be strengthened. I mean, Fred's been rumoured. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought somebody else in. But I think Fernandinho would still be first choice, a new recruit, and then Delph as backup after that for defence midfield. And then, because probably Delph will get more of a shift in midfield, probably a left back. Because obviously Delph got found out a couple of times this season. And then after that, you can't rely on Zinchenko, you can't rely on Phil Foden. They're attacking midfielders, they're like, you know, prepubescent.
So, not sure how Mendy's going to come back.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Mendy is superb, and I think he showed that before he got injured, but that's a big, big injury. Like, you might not see the best of him until after Christmas next season.
Would you take a cheeky Luke Shaw?
I've actually talked about this with my dad.
Have you?
Yeah. Just saying about what a good laugh that would be.
And,
but also just because he would be appreciated at City, he would improve at City. He's actually a very good footballer. He's got a lovely crisp pass across the turf.
Bernie, stop crying.
It's the concept of good players at Manchester United. And by the way, this is one of the very few points that I will agree with Dan is there are lots of players at United who play like trash that I 100% believe under Pep Guardiola would be amazing.
But it doesn't. 100%. That's the scary part. You could literally name any player in football, and once he moves to a team under Pep that has an identity and knows exactly what he needs to do, I don't think you can rule anyone out being a really good player.
No, I can rule out, centre backs. That I can rule out hands down, no problem. But a flying winger that doesn't have to defend, I mean, the left back, winger, same thing at this point. Luke Shaw, that's exactly what he is. Give him to Guardiola, he'll be amazing.
Fair.
Guaranteed.
So who goes out? Anyone?
Why would you want to do that? I mean, I hope Aguero doesn't go. I mean, that would be terrible, but there does seem to be spells where Jesus gets a nod ahead of him, which is odd. I think it's because of more versatility in the attack that Jesus brings. He grafts maybe a little bit more. After that, I mean, you know, obviously Yaya goes, the company's proved his worth, he'll stay there for another season. I don't think you make many changes from here. Maybe Claudio Bravo moves on because he wants first-team football.
I think that's fair.
There's a couple of younger goalkeepers there who will probably move into a second choice. So, you know, otherwise, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Is Otamendi... Well, Stones no longer really starts, but is Otamendi a starting centre-back in next season?
Are you going to play three at the back next season? Because
what about
the back?
Laporte in there as well?
Yeah, Kompany's going to play for sure.
Yeah, I think it will be a back four. I think Kompany will be rotated out, so, you know, don't put too much stress on his calves. I think John Stones will be trusted a little bit more. He's played a lot in the first half of the season. I think he's been kind of put out of the firing line a little bit. Otamendi, for the majority of the season, was probably one of City's most improved players. It's just that you really saw the Otamendi of old in the Liverpool games, United games, where he just hit crossfield balls into the stands. He just...
Concentration
zero. Atrocious, like goes to ground too easily. So I think he has to work for his place. Otherwise, I think, you know, even if you rotated the other three, I think you'd be in decent hands.
Yeah. Did Mustafi and Otamendi play together at Valencia?
I think I read something like that. Yeah.
Maybe
I feel like there was some overlap. That must have been amazing.
They weren't very good, Valencia. So no, that might explain
true.
That.
That's true. Gary Neville gets there and he's trying to sort it out. No wonder it didn't really work. So let's move on to United.
Yeah, I was going to say at that point, City hadn't won the league yet.
Oh, I thought we were skipping this game.
No, we weren't skipping this game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, United might have skipped it.
Yeah.
But we're gonna visit it for sure.
Sure, thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Yeah, so at this point, City hadn't won the league yet. Everybody thought, okay, United are going to play last place West Brom. They're coming off a brilliant comeback win against league leaders / champions, pretty much.
Yeah, West Brom coming off 900 losses in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yep, no manager, you know, that all that good stuff. And then they actually put in a very good performance at Old Trafford and come out 1-0 winners there. I mean, I watched the whole game. And one, United are very hard to watch,
mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And second is that it wasn't even like Hail Mary. It wasn't throwing the sink at them. It was West Brom were just pretty much chilling. Like nothing's happening. Like it's not like United were killing it to get a goal back or go ahead or whatever it was. It was just like, yeah, pass it around. West Brom were just doing nothing. Rondon is bullying whoever comes near him. And
I mean,
yeah. And that's it. And West Brom, you know, Lukaku left his man on a corner and whoever it was... ex-Southampton or whatever.
Jay Rodriguez.
He scored the goal from the corner and that
not
was that.
Officially not racist, Jay Rodriguez.
Officially not.
Yeah, cleared.
I
just thought it was... Because
he's cleared of racism, does that mean that Guy Tombong does have bad breath?
I mean, that's what you're insinuating.
Tweet us. Let us know.
If you've ever met Guy Tombong, clarify.
I love the way you say his name.
How do you say it?
I don't know, but just as
it's probably not like that, is it?
I think it is probably the best name in the Premiership, though.
It has to be. It has to be.
Yeah. Anyway.
But on the game, I honestly was... I mean, when people saw the lineup, a lot of people were asking questions. A lot of people were not... They thought it was quite strange that they would play this way. But it felt as if United thought, our seasons, we've beaten City, our season's over. And they were walking around.
Well, the celebrations at the end of last game were a bit excessive, I thought. I don't know. I just... How can you be so inconsistent? I mean, literally top of the table, bottom of the table. It was weird. Nothing was happening. There was... Mata tried, to be fair. Mata was buzzing around, trying to do something. I love it whenever Herrera plays, because that means United are going to lose most of the time. And I just enjoy it so much. And he's... I don't know. There just wasn't enough. Lukaku... tried. Sanchez was horrendous again.
I felt the same way that I felt all season, which is, how is this team second?
Mm-hmm.
It's bizarre.
They haven't lost in six or something.
Every week you watch them and you're like, they're rubbish. They're absolutely rubbish.
Look at their record.
I guess they keep smashing small teams.
No.
But,
well, they've beaten every single team they played this season.
The last five games, they've beaten Spurs, Chelsea, City. They've beaten
forget that. Every single team this season. I don't give Mourinho credit. If I want to give him credit for something, I'll give you credit if you beat everyone you play. Even if you lose all the game, whatever. Everyone you play, that's not bad. It really isn't. But my problem with this, and I spoke to Alex about this before, is what is the point of buying Romelu Lukaku if you don't play to his strength? If you see the goals that he's scored, and when he's gone on a really good scoring run, it's because United played quick through balls or crosses. What is the point of Alexis Sanchez coming inside and trying to do a stupid dink when a team is playing too far, like too close to their goalkeeper? What is the point of Mata coming inside and doing the same thing? What is the point?
It is the dink drinking game.
Keeping talking, I'm enjoying this.
You can go for hours. I don't know.
Like, we're going to watch a game together one day. You're going to watch me get furious. Like, at this, because
especially
Mourinho,
if you said half a beer, forget about
it. That's fast and furious now.
Mourinho is simply, he called this team a master in complication. That's what he said.
Yeah.
I don't see who is more complicated than Jose Mourinho as a manager.
And whose fault is that? It's the manager's fault. It's not the player's fault. It's complicated for them because either the instructions are very, very poor and they don't know what they're doing, or because, quite frankly, they don't want to play that boring dross.
Yeah.
So and their manager is psychotic. He's actually psychotic. Yeah. He plays so much mind games that the minute there's no mind games to play, it's weird. Like, you know what I mean? It's like... I was talking to this United fan, and he's like, I was like, what's wrong with United? He's like, this is what happens to United. Mourinho puts them out defensively.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the goal. They go, screw this. Everybody just does whatever they try to do to, you know, like against City, get three goals in 5 minutes, and then, you know, because that's not the Mourinho way, then they go back to playing the Mourinho way. So it's like, you have to almost drop what Mourinho says if you're going to get anything out of the game.
So you know how people say that Klopp and Guardiola don't know how to train defenses? There have been a lot of articles that have come out recently about Mourinho and the way he trains attackers. He tries to get them to just play. But he puts people in positions that don't make sense. Because you can't tell Alexis Sanchez, do your thing. Juan Mata, do your... They're going to do what they know, which is cut inside.
Yeah.
But if you play an actual right-sided winger or something, and a left-sided winger and say, play, and Lukaku play, they're going to play the way that makes sense. But he puts them in the wrong position and they do whatever they want to, which doesn't make any sense.
Does that mean your dream signing this summer is Mark Albrighton?
Yes. Yes. And Riyad Mahrez too.
No. From Southampton. Beckham wannabe.
Oh, Ward-Prowse.
Absolutely, mate.
Ward-Prowse on one side, Albrighton on the other.
The problem is, your best crosser is Lukaku. Like, he has such a nice cross on him.
He really does.
He just needs to run in there and get his own crosses. But anyways, this was amazing. I mean, obviously, all the jokes and all the banter about, you know, what a waste of time it was just beating City last week to give this up. Now, Ben Foster was very good this game as well, we have to say. I think he...
England's number one?
I mean, if all you have to do is beat Joe Hart, yeah, sure.
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but today he was culpable for Peter Crouch's goal. I think it was a shot from Shaqiri from the edge of the area, and he spilt it right into Crouch's path.
Beautiful.
So I think...
Thanks, Ben.
He is either the fourth or fifth choice goalkeeper.
But he's better than Hart, though. Let's be real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Plenty of people are, but Hart still...
Hart had a world-class performance last week. Yeah. I'm just saying, if it's on form...
That was the
only
one.
What do you mean? Ben Foster played like 2 days ago and had a world-class performance.
Okay, sure. Anything else about this game before we move on?
I think Darren Moore deserves some credit. I mean, well, we just want to have a bit of a bash of Alan Pardew, don't yeah. we? I mean, James McLean said after the game, I mean, he's not the cleverest lad, but this is quite insightful. He said, it obviously helps when you go out on the pitch knowing that what you're doing. So,
yeah,
I just put there is obviously a bit of a disconnect when Pardew was in charge, and I find that delightful because he's an odorous twat.
Yes, he is. And do you reckon the media person at West Brom was just like, right, James, just say something that no one can disagree with, right?
Was anyone struck by the fact of how huge he was compared to Jose Mourinho?
Darren Moore? Oh, he's a unit.
Like, he stood next to Mourinho, I thought, what, is Mourinho short? Like, what is going on?
That happened with Wenger too. Remember when they had that little...
Yeah,
shoving match.
Yeah.
Wenger,
even
Arsene Wenger made him look tiny.
I think Mourinho may not be a like he's just a tiny man, and maybe he makes like he tries to overcompensate by being an absolute
but
bitch.
He was a very poor goalkeeper, wasn't he? His playing career, so he must have been more like a bit, you know, a Barthez kind of goalkeeper
or a Spina.
Or a Carroll, Andy. Not Andy.
Roy Carroll. No, he was just trash.
Think I've enjoyed the footballing period more than Roy Carroll and Howard at United. That was literally just joyful. Yeah. I enjoyed that period so much.
I enjoyed Almunia more, to be honest.
Almunia had some good moments.
No, but that's the thing. Arsene Wenger saw the Roy Carroll period Howard, and was like, let's try this. Get someone.
Speaking of that. Arsenal had an away game this week, so you could bet your house that they would lose, which they did. Arsene Wenger started the game with our new shiny 50-something striker out wide left, defending corners all the way at his own corner flag.
Hey, it worked for after, 10 minutes?
Yeah, it was brilliant. And
it was actually a lovely goal.
It was.
The Aubameyang take was good, the cross was good, the finish was excellent.
Mustafi's long ball was brilliant before he decided to Mustafi the rest of the game. this was weird. Iwobi was really good the game before as a number 10. He moved him for Willock, who he brought in. A lot of random decisions. Nothing changes with Arsenal week in, week out. Like, it's almost as if the league is pretty much foregone and it doesn't matter at this point.
Hence Joe Willock starting again.
Yeah, but the problem is then you look at who made the mistakes, and it's Mustafi who's going to play against Griezmann in a week, and it's Petr Cech who's having a horrendous time at Arsenal overall. Mustafi, again, it's literally copy-paste from last week. The same goal, the player runs across him, front post. Again, Cech just looked... You think watching the replay that it's in slow-mo when it's not. It just takes him forever to get down to his left to try and get anything on the ball. And then there's a few instances where Mustafi just... I think Vidic was a pundit on Sky or something for this game, and he ripped Mustafi apart. Literally took him apart. It's just saying, forget about Arsene Wenger, forget about all that stuff. Mustafi just did not do any of the basics of centre-back defending. Mm-hmm. And you look at the second goal, Mustafi was literally ball watching. I was live before the goal went in. This is not a replay. I was watching it. I was like, that header is definitely going to that guy. Like 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, where else was it going to go? And he just stood there and watched it go over him.
But why does he keep playing is my question. Well, like, isn't there anything better than Mustafi now?
Well, I would say so, but, as a manager, you can't just, banish him for the rest of the season.
Why?
Especially
with
only a few games left.
Chambers not better than Mustafi?
No.
The thing That's is the that thing. Occasionally Mustafi will have an epic game. And very occasionally he does look good. But lately it's just been
it's been very bad.
Yeah, it's gotten worse lately is the thing. Like, he was always a kind of Otamendi figure where he'll have a few decent games and then one horrendous one. But lately they've all been horrendous. So it's feeling worse.
The thing though when I hit on Arsenal defenders and centre backs is that you remember that Squillaci interview he did.
The who?
Squillaci or whatever his name is. Yeah. When he left Arsenal and he gave an interview saying, guys, it's literally impossible to defend as an Arsenal centre-back. Like, he said He said, in the way Arsene Wenger wants to play the game, in the way the system is set up, in the way that you have zero protection from midfield, you are literally out there just fighting fires on your own, and defending doesn't work like that at the top level. You can't just win every tackle you go into because there's no one else there.
But
or
no one's
shape.
Asking you to win every tackle. They're asking you to cover the front post and not and let that guy
score. But
the
situations arise too often in a game for the center back to solve them every single time. You talk about City, they don't get as many chances to do the heroics because they have a system that is set up properly.
Let me ask Dan this question, because we've had this conversation on repeat before, and you've been a City fan since you were a child.
Also, Dan's a centre back. So.
Brilliant. So even better. My opinion on this is that this idea, this concept of protection for centre backs is trash. If you're a good centre back, You should be a good center back. I don't care about Fernandinho protecting you from all this rubbish. If you can tackle, you can tackle. You can read the game, you can read the game. If you look at United team again, I can only relate to that. Vidic and Ferdinand, they had nobody in front of them when Hargreaves went away. Nobody. They still had the best defense in the league because they did their jobs correctly. I feel that people are making too many excuses for centre-backs. I don't know what you think.
No, I completely agree. And I think with Mustafi, I don't think it's necessarily an issue with his tackling. I think his basic reading in the game is just terrible. You see so many balls go over his head. You see him, as you said, get beaten to the near post all the time. You know, it's absolutely terrible. And there was a concession from Wenger at the end of this game that maybe there isn't a balance between his attack and defence. Agreed. Mustafi is not good enough, but I think he has to, you know, look at that seesaw, that balance he's got, and he's got a screw loose in the middle with Granit Xhaka as well.
Oh, mate.
Absolutely atrocious. I mean, he should not be a starting defensive midfielder for a team who wants to be in the Champions League.
No.
He's absolute pants. And I think if you look in the league, why doesn't he get Wilfred and Ndidi? Why doesn't really put him into that position, really slowly hone his skills? And then just flick Xhaka out of the way. Absolute pants.
Ndidi is exactly who I want. And yes. I wanted for
you
like
You want Ndidi and Mahrez, basically.
Yes, I wanted Ndidi and Mahrez. I wanted a skillful guy to cut in front to replace Sanchez. And instead of replacing him with a striker, that's not where Sanchez plays, and get Ndidi, who has the most tackles in the league. He's emulating Kante, and just to do that is incredible. But it's funny to see. I mean, Rafa Benitez did two very simple things which looked like tactical masterclass. All he did was in the first half, he had Shelby get the ball and spring him into the corner. He literally just Shelby, every time he got the ball, just kicked it long over whoever's head, and Ayoze Perez and Dwight Gale, little dudes, just ran and chased
them. They put in shifts.
And that's it. Whole first half, boom, 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 a goal. Second half, he went, you know what, we've done this enough. Let's put on a big dude in Islam Slimani. And we're just going to play the ball to him. And now he's going to win a header against these Chambers and Holdings and Mustafis who can barely jump. And that's it. We're going to score a second goal that way. And it's just so... You cannot, like... Again, you want to be in the Champions League. You want to do this. You want to be Atletico Madrid, who haven't conceded in 150 games. You want to do all these things. But you can't get beat so simply and so easily against a team... I know Newcastle are in form, but it's no excuse.
Also, Wenger's quote afterwards, and Dan, you alluded to what he was saying, but it's a weird one because he says, losing like this is a worry character-wise. Our attitude today was spot on, but I have to be realistic enough to say that maybe our balance offensively and defensively doesn't work. So, like, he said it's a character problem, then he says the attitude was perfect and it was a balance problem.
Can I say
it doesn't
one
make
thing
any
about,
sense.
About attitude? And one of you guys brought this up before the game, where Lacazette said, we want to win the Europa League because that's the way the manager will stay. In my opinion, any Arsenal player that doesn't see that Arsene Wenger, they are part of the problem, by the way, doesn't see that Arsene Wenger himself is part of the problem and really wants him to stay.
He hasn't been there.
That is an attitude problem, in my opinion.
Talk to Van Persie, talk to Fabregas, talk to
they
all these
people. They all say he's washed.
Look, my problem with Arsene Wenger is after every game, you ask him a question and he goes to these intangibles. He goes to character, drive, whatever, hunger, handbrake. He goes to all these intangibles. He never goes, yeah, the wrong player was playing the wrong position, or this guy didn't track this man, or we lost because we lost the 50-50s. No, it's always some random intangible about someone wanting it more than someone else.
It's never tactical.
If football was all about who wanted it more, Stoke would be, you know, champions every season. It doesn't work like that. You also have to do something tactically to win a football game.
Absolutely.
With regards to Newcastle, I think, you know, obviously Rafa Benitez deserves a lot of credit for what he's done there. Absolute no support from the boardroom whatsoever. He's got some real poor players in the team, like, you know, poor Dummett and people like that. Like, they're not Premier League players at all. And, you know, what he's wrung out of that team is quite incredible. And I have to say, you know, Jonjo Shelvey at the moment, I'd pick him for the England team. He had a lovely old time against Arsenal.
Someone had to say it.
I'm all out for it. I mean, imagine...
Livermore made it. Come on.
Oh, God. I picked Jack Cork over him, and I'm being honest with that one as well. But I think as a plan B for England, if you get Jonjo Shelvey pinging those long balls and Vardy running through on them, I think that's a fantastic alternative right there. And, yeah, and Drinkwater's not getting the minutes right now, so why shouldn't Shelvey travel?
Dan, on that point of Benitez, sorry, Alex.
No, go.
I just want to get your viewpoint on this. I feel, and I think a lot of people have been talking about him just, this is coaching. This is literally the definition of coaching and making people better, even if they're shit. Like
but that's the whole point of a coach.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels almost like a lost art in this day and age. And I don't think Benitez gets enough credit at all.
No, because managers now are literally, people think of them as people who pick transfers. And, you know, you work in July and you work in January and you're done. And then in between, you're like, oh, well, he bought bad players or he bought good players. Or he spent this amount of money and he didn't spend this amount of money. It's not just about that. I mean, you look at someone like Bournemouth manager, you look at someone like even Roy Hodgson when he came into Crystal Palace. I mean, there's a lot of options where you don't have to have the best team. You have to have realistic expectations, obviously, of the players you have. But you can make them as a sum. Or whatever it is, some of the parts are greater than whatever. That is your role as a manager. That is, it's not Mourinho every season going, or you know, Conte going, I don't have the players, or Mourinho going, I don't have the players, and Pep spending all the money to get the good players. It's not. You just have to, like, we always talk about Arsene Wenger and Arsenal. People say he doesn't have enough good players. One, he's been there for 20 years, so there's literally no chance that a player is there that he hasn't picked. Mm. So there's that. And two is, you don't think that with Pep as manager, Arsenal are going to be second or third?
Of course it would.
Of course. They're not that bad individually. Like, they're just not. And anyways, so yeah, Newcastle 1-2-1.
Speaking of shit managers, Southampton 2, Chelsea 3. Mark Hughes a special.
Take it away, Alex.
I cannot get over. I'm looking at the league table, right? So Southampton went 2-0 up, and I disliked Chelsea very much. And I was like, this is fantastic. And then Chelsea came back 3-2, and I was like, I dislike Mark Hughes even more. This is brilliant, right? So I'm looking at the league table. 18th, Southampton. 19th, Stoke. Has any manager ever relegated two clubs in one season?
This is why people want Southampton. Like, people like Southampton. They try and play football. They're not really a team that I necessarily think about right away to, yes, please go down.
No.
They're not like a Sunderland from a few
seasons
ago.
No, I like the club.
But it would be funny for Mark Hughes to relegate two teams.
It would be epic.
Yeah.
Just absolutely epic. He surely will never recover from that.
It's just a question for one of our trivia
nights. In a couple of years, people forget, it'll be a great quiz question. Yeah.
So yeah, Southampton went 2-0 up. Chelsea are having a really wobbly time, and then they bring on Giroud, who, this is what he does, he saves games like these.
Yep.
Brilliant first header. Woo! That's a Giroud right there.
I'm sorry, it's over for Morata. For this is over.
Easy.
Get rid, Alex.
He's only like 12.
I'm sorry. No. I don't mean his career, I mean Chelsea. It's over. Forget about it.
Look, he's had a terrible season. No. But I feel they're unlikely to sell him given they just...
No. Listen.
Okay.
Listen. Here's... And I think Mohamed will agree in this context. Regardless. I'm looking for people to support me here. Okay, back me up here. Olivier Giroud has been underrated
his whole career.
I'm 100%.
100%.
His whole career. Yeah, that's my hype man right there. I'm serious. Olivier Giroud's goal record is astounding.
Arsenal should have never sold him. It really is astounding.
I'm not disagreeing with you. He hated him.
Arsenal should never have sold Giroud.
I know.
Well done. Yeah, keep going.
You actually shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he needs to start for Chelsea. What you need at Chelsea is stability. Something that you know is a sure thing. Olivier Giroud scoring goals is a sure thing for Chelsea right now.
To be fair, he can't move, so incredibly stable.
But that's—I think you can't argue against it. I mean, that's a one-sided debate. Giroud has to start, but I don't think Morata's necessarily spent. There was that time, earlier in the season, he was all right, and there was a little spell when Hazard was playing behind him when he looked good. He just seems bereft of confidence right now. I think he needs taking out the firing line. I don't know what's going on there, but as for the game against Southampton. You know, you see that Giroud goal go in, and just every Southampton player was just a collective shit themselves, wasn't it? They completely lost any form of discipline, organisation, and it was, you know, seeing Mark Hughes' face when the third goal went in was just an absolute delight.
Yes, it was. It is the season, I've noticed, of no new manager bounce. Like, Southampton didn't get one with Hughes, West Brom certainly didn't get one with Pardew.
Hodgson did it.
Hodgson did it, Carvajal,
if I pronounce his name right. Yeah. Swansea, he did it.
But you're right, it's less so. There's no that Pulis push. There isn't that... What, I mean, Big Sam?
No. That started two games before him, even though I can't remember his name now.
Unsworth
was shit for four games and then got 1-2, I think.
He was also the only manager ever that's been fatter than Sam Allardyce.
Wasn't Sam Allardyce the manager that he should have taken over, but they were playing like a City and he said, no, I'm going to like join next game?
Yeah,
he literally sat in the stands like a week after being appointed, being like, no, I'm starting next game.
Wasn't it Rooney's hat trick? He was in the stands. He wasn't actually the manager for that game.
Something like that.
Yes, and then after, though, when he was talking about his record ever since he was defending it, he included concluded that game, even though he wasn't on the touchline.
Oh, isn't that when he said, if this was a tie, like a Champions League tie, I would have beaten Liverpool home and away on away goals or something. I would go through.
Oh, you'll take any credit, but there's been no bounce from him. He's just rolled.
Liverpool, speaking of, beat Bournemouth 3-0. This was... I mean, I watch Liverpool now just for my boy Salah, and I just want him to do well, and I want him to get one over Kane, and I want him blah, blah. You know, it's personal. He's Egyptian. I'm Egyptian, obviously.
But Kane took his goal, though.
Yeah, that's right. So Kane is now only 3 goals away from Salah. But this goal, specifically, was something different.
What a header.
Because when you read a Salah goal before you see it, you think, okay, you know, something comes to mind. Yeah. But it's not this. No. He did this on purpose, too, because that's not a header that was going in if a keeper was on his line. So I just enjoyed it from a kind of, he showed more to his abilities with this goal, and it was good.
It was a beautiful ball as well from, what's his name, Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Who's having like a world-class couple of games right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the new Cafu, not, you know, they keep switching.
Not Flanagan. Flanagan didn't work out.
No. But yeah, Liverpool are a lot of fun to watch this season. I enjoy them. I can tune into any of their games. You know, they're fun to watch.
No, we ran a poll after City got the title on the score, and just saying, you know, which team is most likely to unseat City. And it was interesting because I thought, you know, obviously, numerically, there's a lot of United fans, so I thought maybe they'd win this and they got a lot of cash behind them, but 53% for Liverpool and then 27% for United.
I think that's a lot of neutrals.
Yeah, yep. A big proportion.
That's an interesting poll, only because I don't trust Liverpool to scale those heights in the Premier League. Like, to go and... Like, you're talking about the team that can beat City to the league, right? That was what that poll was.
Yeah, the next team to take it.
Liverpool are not that team.
Look. You've got the front three. We all agree on them, right?
Sure.
Then you're going to get Naby Keita next season.
Yeah,
sure. Ox is starting to come into form. He's a good transition player, which really helps Liverpool get that ball and just take it halfway down the field in, like, 3 seconds. And then you start... Robertson is coming into form. If Trent continues this, you have... Van Dijk is playing...
Trent.
Well, whatever.
You're not going to say his full name, are you?
There's no time. We're already 40 minutes in. If Van Dijk continues his form... If you also... Liverpool, we joke about their defense. You look at their record recently, they have actually been very, very good defensively. If Karius continues this way, or they get a new keeper, and they pair Van Dijk with someone else, all of a sudden... You can see them mounting something substantial. I'm not saying they're going to win.
The only reason I disagree with that point is because... And firstly, Mourinho is the one key factor in this that can make you say, no, that's not going to happen, because he's fucking nutcase. That's one thing.
Mourinho?
Like I'm saying, from a United standpoint, the reason why they wouldn't do it is because Mourinho cannot be consistent in his mind. But if you look at it again, I'll say it again, United beat everybody they played. Liverpool cannot say that. And Liverpool don't have the consistency over the... We're talking about what happens if Naby Keita comes in, what happens if this comes in. They have not been consistent for 4 years.
But Bernie,
this United team, if Mourinho consistently applies the right tactics, they will. I'm not saying they'll win because they won't beat City next season, but have a better chance than Liverpool.
No, definitely. Liverpool 1 point behind Manchester United right now.
They but fixed United a couple have a game things. In hand.
So what? Like, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Nothing. and Liverpool over the last couple of games did what? They were ahead of United and then toppled. So? United won 6 games in a row.
Okay. The point is the broader trends. And the trends are that Liverpool are improving. Yep. And Manchester United, despite being second, are not. And you say like it hangs on Mourinho implementing proper tactics next season consistently. He's not going to do that. You know he's not going to do that. If anything, he'll go even more mental.
That's
if you have
correct.
To change managers, then you have another season in which you need to transition.
We know that Manchester United... And remember, I hate this team. This Manchester United have dramatically improved points-wise... And everything else, they have improved. They scored more goals, better defense, even though it's shit. And they've improved drastically more than Liverpool have from last season of Liverpool. So it's a mute point to say that United have not improved. That's just incorrect.
But the way that they play football has not improved.
That's not part of the point, is it?
Yeah, no, it is. It is.
Yeah,
because
I think it is. Because it's a trajectory that Liverpool are on there. We think United are there. We just feel that United are at the end of their rope.
But in that case, we might as well say that Tottenham are the best team outside of Man City.
Tottenham
and we have had this discussion. We know that's not true. So what are we saying?
Also, don't forget that City are pretty much in the finals of the Champions League. I mean, that's no small feat.
Who?
Liverpool.
I was like, City?
Sorry. So like, that's not a small feat.
Yeah, don't remind me.
But Liverpool have a style. They have a way of playing. Everyone knows what their job is. Everyone knows how they're going to play.
They're only
Manchester
going to improve,
United
I think.
Are
so why are they ahead of Liverpool? And why did they United were what, sixth last season?
As I said, I find it very difficult to explain the success of this Manchester United team, but
I just feel it's not sustainable.
You can't honestly think that Jose Mourinho is going to turn this Manchester United team into one that can beat City.
I think that's it. I think it's a fewer tweaks that Liverpool have to make to make their team challenge for a title. I think Karius has been fantastic since he's known he's got a number one shirt. Even Lovren's been playing quite well. So maybe a defensive midfield backup for Henderson, because I'll never like him.
Or replacement.
You know, just anything like that. But I think they're just like one or two players, fewer tweaks, Liverpool can challenge for the title. I don't know where United should strengthen from here.
Final word.
Yeah, I think we should move on to a quiz.
Let's do it.
So, welcome to the new quiz, the Bizas.
Yeah,
not bad.
That's pretty good. We'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll take it. Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Every week we're like, it will do. Just move on.
So I have four questions lined up. One of them you guys already answered, but just to put the fact back out there. City won the league with 5 games to go. Whose record did they equal and from what season? It was United from the 2000-2001 season. Mm-hmm. All right. So 3 more questions to go. Question number one. Other than being the first Oh, by the way, these are all City kind of themed for being champions,
I don't know who's going to win this one.
Everyone's head popped up because it was so focused, ready to go.
I'll do a 1 second gap before I say anything.
Other than being the first Spanish manager to win the EPL, what else is Pep the first to be?
That was easy.
Bernie.
First manager to win a league in England, Spain, Germany.
Alex.
First completely bald manager.
Yes.
Get it.
You're thinking way too hard, mate. He's the first bald manager to win the Premier League.
They all had hair?
All of them, every single one.
But they're so old, all of them.
Every single one.
Wow, actually, yeah, you think about it, they've all had lovely heads of hair.
Yeah.
Kenny Dalglish probably had the best head of hair.
I think the closest that came to was an Aston Villa manager, not in the Premier League, but like in the 80s, who was balding.
Right.
But Pep is gone.
Pellegrini.
Great hair.
Pellegrini, Conte regrew it.
Wenger. Yeah, they all, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, question number two. And Bernie, you alluded to this. Name the only three managers to have won a title in at least 3 of the top 4 leagues in Europe.
That was easy.
Bernie.
Mourinho, Ancelotti, Guardiola.
Correct. Ancelotti, Italy, England, Germany. Jose Mourinho, England, Italy, Spain. And Pep Guardiola, Spain, Germany, England.
Are there any left or is that it?
Also, Ancelotti has won in France. So he's got 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is...
You're on the ball today.
Yeah.
Not in the last one.
Last question. What do the last 5 Premier League champions have in common?
They all play in blue.
Yes! Get in!
Mohamed, you've been telling us all season that Barcelona aren't actually very good.
Yes.
And Roma proved it.
Yes, and even though they've been unbeaten in the league, etc., etc., I've been preaching about how ungood they are.
Lord!
So...
Is there any parallel to the Invincibles? At all.
Because what of mean? What? The bad Europe?
This guy, Dan, did not put the Invincibles in his best team ever. Oh, is there a parallel?
No, absolutely not.
Well, I mean, unbeaten in the league, league champions, very bad in Europe. Maybe a little bit. But obviously, Barca aren't kind of, they don't have that aura of invincibility around them because they just haven't been that good. They haven't played football the Barcelona way in a long, long, long time. Even Barcelona, I follow a lot of Barcelona accounts on Twitter just to kind of gauge the vibe around the club and the mood. And they all know that they're scraping through here. I mean, like we said, we talked about this last week. You've got Ter Stegen, Umtiti, Alba-ish, and Messi.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of carrying the team across this finish line of the league that no one expected they would win the season anyway. I don't know how Madrid started the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's been all over the place. Iniesta's going to China. It's been confirmed for next season. Rakitic, Paulinho, Busquets, all in really bad form. Their right back situation is horrendous. Dembele, Coutinho.
What's wrong with Semedo? Like, he's been good every time I've seen him.
Just not that solid. The thing with Barcelona is they have a different standard. Rakitic, Paulinho, that's not good enough for Barcelona. I always see them as a different standard, and they just haven't recruited well enough.
So, question based on this. When Luis Enrique was manager, even though they won the treble, there was a lot of, people saying that he's not playing the Barca way, mm-hmm. which when they were actually showing some tactical flexibility at that time. are there from your Barcelona resources on Twitter and what else?
My ITK.
Exactly. You're my Barcelona resource now.
Yeah.
Are they saying similar things? Because it got very, very bad between the fans and Enrique. Or have they learned from that experience and they're being patient?
So before we go to our Barcelona correspondent, I just like... there is an element to which... I mean, they've been playing 4-4-2 most of the season. And a lot of that is getting the best... But they didn't have that third player because Dembele was out for so long. So they needed to switch the system. But it's also to get the best out of Iniesta, to kind of put more people around him because he's bloody old. But this is the first time that a Barcelona manager has not played some variant of 4-3-3 for I don't know how long. It has to be, you know, decades.
They're very split on Valverde. Very split on him. Some games, they feel like, yes, he pulls this masterclass out of his whatever. And other games, they feel that he just has glaring mistakes. Against Roma, no changes were made for way too long.
Mm-hmm.
Paulinho, a lot of Barcelona fans felt Paulinho should have started to give a bit more dynamic. A lot of them don't want Iniesta to start. They can see the struggles when Iniesta starts. It's too static. Dembele, like... He's not in the best form. Semedo should not have... He played Sergio Roberto, I think, in midfield. And a lot of them are like, Sergio Roberto is a beast of a right back. Stick him there. Semedo's not having a best season. Why is he starting away?
Sure, but on home? This game, you're 4-1 up, right? It was 4-1 in the first leg.
Yeah.
In their minds and in any of our minds, did it matter what they did?
Speak for yourself, man.
I will definitely say that I did not expect this from Roma. There has been... Roma have had some good performances this season, but there's nothing that they have done, and there's no tactical innovation that Sergio Di Francesco has done this season that hinted that they were capable of this level of performance.
No, it was outrageous, and I think, Edin Dzeko holding up the ball, scoring goals, I think when he's on form, he can be one of the best strikers on the continent.
Yes, incredibly underrated.
Yeah, it's just apart from when he's off form, he's just terrible.
He's done it everywhere.
Yeah, he has.
Germany, England, Italy now.
Yep.
He, everywhere he goes, he has a fantastic goal-scoring record.
And Kostas Manolas would be a winner, was, getting to the near post. He's been plagued with the nickname of mediocrities. And he comes to the front, to get to the near post like that.
I love it.
And nod the ball in.
Over Semedo.
Yeah, terrible, terrible defending. I think a lot of the time this season, I know every team would rely on Messi, but it's reached whole new levels this season. Yes. And he's dragged them over the line so many times. And he can't be held culpable of the rest of his team downs tools and thinks they got the job done. I think out of all, we had a really, really good European week, actually. Some really good comebacks and stuff like that. This was by far the best. And it should go down as an all-time great.
There's a lot of argument and, consensus among Barca fans that their reliance on Messi is way... obviously, he's the best player, blah, 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 but it's way too much. It's like, you are asking for way too much. He's dropping so deep to create and to score goals and to assist. And also, the thing with Messi right now is that there is a really good article and a conversation in the comments between Barca fans about how they feel that even as well as they've done, Barcelona have wasted Messi's prime. The 2013 till now, the time where Messi has been, the treble got pulled again out of God knows where. That was completely lucky second half of the season.
Still a treble.
Yes,
I mean,
but other than that four gap, for Messi to have won, one Champions League in, the last... How many? Six? Five? Like, the fact that he's also lost, a 4-1 Ballon d'Or lead, it all just, I think, leads to the fact that they could have done way more as a team to really make use of his prime period.
I just don't buy that. A football club can always make better decisions, and Barcelona haven't been run well for a few years at management level. But equally, you could say, or how many league titles has Real Madrid won with Ronaldo? They should have won more. They couldn't possibly have, bought much better players to surround him. It's a team sport. Having the best player in the world doesn't guarantee that the rest of it's going
to
go well.
But it does for Barca sometimes.
I tend to agree with Alex on this only because how can we talk about them wasting Lionel Messi when they literally gave him the best backup you could find in world football? And there were a lot of people who falsely, I must say, said that Neymar was the second best player in the world. So, but at least the fact that they were making that statement shows you how just amazing that talent pool was. And yes, I get it. People said MSN carried them over the line all this jazz. But I think the fact of the matter is Busquets was younger. He was still in the prime of his career. Rakitic, when they won the Champions League, was fantastic. Simply fantastic. And Iniesta was still not as old as he is now. So what were you going to do? Shift Iniesta? Like what were they really going to do?
Well, but you look at their signings recently, and they've just been a waste of money. You look at Andre Gomes. You look at the other guy in midfield that they bought that doesn't play a single minute. You look at, even right now, Dembele still has to come good. Coutinho is still, we haven't talked about it, but Umtiti is possibly their only good and incredibly brilliant signing, because he's been one of the best centre backs in the world.
He's got a release clause of 60 million euros as well, which is, very, very dangerous.
They put 200 million on Sergio Roberto, and then they put 60 on...
Yeah,
it's dangerous. I mean, it's not only up to them. Like, if his agent said that's all that you can do, then
right. We're talking a lot about Barcelona and not about Roma.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
yeah.
What I just want to say about this is that, we've said before, you're probably bored of hearing that we went to the Olympico a few years ago and we saw a game in which Totti scored two last-minute goals, and the atmosphere there, even though the stadium was only, half full,
mm-hmm.
maybe?
Half?
If that.
Mate,
if
that. A quarter. just the stand we're in.
The atmosphere there on what was a magical night was absolutely incredible.
You can only imagine.
80,000 people were in the Olympico for this
game. There's no way that was... This and I think Totti's retirement were the two moments where I think the Olympico, I don't think he can beat. We literally had maybe 20,000, 25
at the most, I would say.
And it was insanity in there.
I was watching this and not much moves me to tears.
Yeah.
And this nearly did. It was that.
Because you could imagine
intense.
When we were there, and then you multiply that by that. I mean, when we were there, who were they playing?
Torino,
exactly. This must have been the place to be in the world at that moment.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, James Pilotta chucking himself into a fountain.
Yeah,
great,
incredible
stuff.
No, I think the Stadio Olimpico, I've been there myself to watch Lazio versus Napoli one time.
Ooh,
and
that's a good one.
And it does, the sound reverberates around there. And again, there are empty seats there, but you've got bangers going off. You've got, people surging to the front of the stands when there's a goal. It's a real... overlooked stadium, really, just for the history it holds. I mean, it's really, really weird. It's got a tribute to Mussolini outside. It's basically a lot of Rome. It's history. It's right there. And if you get a chance to go and see it, because in my opinion, it's the best thing in Rome. I don't think the rest of the city is that good.
That's hilarious.
I'll say I had a lot of fun in Rome.
Oh, Rome's great. Yeah. I mean, that party must have been absolutely insane.
A lot of babies were conceived.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In 9 months, you can't... There was something. There was the Barcelona 6-1. A lot of babies 9 months later.
I think one of the players made...
The players had a baby. Yeah, everybody just had a baby.
So 9 months from now, we can expect a few little baby mediocrities.
So they will play Liverpool in their semi-final. Liverpool did very well to get past City. People were expecting possibly City to come back into this, at least to some degree. A lot of people said, a heroic loss, a 2-0 win on the night, but they'll lose overall. And City scored really early. Mm. And I think a previous Liverpool, and this is why I was talking about the kind of trajectory of this side, a previous Liverpool would have crumbled. But they held really firm here, and City... from then on didn't really look like they were going to come back into it. In fact, Liverpool got a couple of goals
and
they walked away with it.
It's easy when you have the best player in the world playing for you at the at the moment.
Yeah, Salah.
Van Dijk.
In case you forgot who we're talking about.
Yeah, so that's easy when he's always going to pull something out of the hat. So, that's all I have to say about this game.
What I'm very happy about in the context of this game is that very few, even though you can make the argument, very few City fans are saying that they lost because of the referees. They're admitting that, yes, it was a factor potentially, but many of them that call into TV shows and all this stuff are saying, we actually were just shit over two legs. And I appreciate that. For example, United fans could have said some stupid thing about a penalty at West Brom. Thank God they didn't, because I would have slapped anyone that did. They were shit. And that was important because Liverpool just over two legs were better. Just simply were better.
Also, you do realize as a United fan that City are going to win the league. Liverpool might be Champions League winners. I mean, that's going to be a horrendous summer.
No, not really.
I'm just saying.
There are very few things that bother me except for Liverpool winning the league. That would actually bother
me. The Champions League is... Oh, fine.
No. When 2005, I was cheering Liverpool to come back from Milan because I wanted to see history. It was very, very weird, but I was.
Yeah, I think you'd be quite bothered as well if you went to the FA Cup final and lost to Southampton. I think
Yes, that would grind my gears.
I would love for Chelsea to also win the FA Cup and Arsenal to win the Europa League. Literally everybody but United with a trophy. I'd sign up for that.
Like you...
Arsenal.
No,
not
you won FA Cup last
league.
Year.
Yeah, we've won 3 out of 4, mate. Arsene Wenger killing it. All right, so don't even try.
I'm just waiting for us. I actually said to someone, I want Arsenal to win the Europa League because I can't wait to see the hypocrisy. From all of you. All of you were like, ooh, this Europa League. I just can't wait for it. Because I have the tweets ready.
But
I have
them ready. You do realize that United fans are going to do the exact same thing with the FA Cup. I'm just saying.
They will.
Okay.
I will.
I don't know how this moved to that, but let's talk about, Juventus Madrid.
Wait. Before we do that, quick, okay. Let's get a quick Liverpool-Roma prediction. Over two legs. On, you know.
Come on, Liverpool.
But Liverpool have it in them. They have it in them to mess this up. That's my issue. That's what you were talking about the league earlier. They have that streak in them.
Yes, they do, but come on.
Dan?
I think they'll be absolutely fine. I think over the two legs, something similar to what they did against City, 5-1 on aggregate.
Yeah, well, that is a bit much for me, but I still think they'll beat Roma, yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, now you can move on.
There's no money on the table, this is whatever.
Well, we can do that if you want. But.
Yeah. I mean, see, the minute these games, we saw this comeback, I think the first thing I told you guys was like, this is how you make money off betting. This is the kind of stuff you need to guess what's going to happen and make tons of money.
I saw a picture of someone's, what's that thing? Like the betting receipt or whatever, and he made 20,000.
Yeah, these are the moments that you cash in on. Yeah. Anyways, another moment was almost there. Madrid had beaten Juventus at home at the Bernabeu 3-0 with that Ronaldo epic overhead kick. Obviously, you know, well done, etc. And then Juventus, he's just insufferable. Juventus had no chance of coming back into this. Everyone thought, well, that's it. Dybala's out from his stupid red card the previous game. All good. And then slowly, you know, Carvajal was just having a horrendous game at the back post, which I would like to think that Juve pinpointed that mismatch with Mandzukic and Carvajal.
I would expect so.
Yeah, and kind of said, you know what, this is where we're gonna get a few few chances, and they did. Mandzukic with two headers, and then who scored the third?
Matuidi off Keylor Navas complete
mistake. So at that point, it was a tie game on aggregate, and then that penalty incident where Buffon just went. But he's still talking about it today, by the way.
He needs to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but at this point, he's retiring. Whatever. Like,
no, it's not. It's not whatever because Lucy Oliver is getting completely destroyed. There's hate mail coming to her house. All this stuff because of what he said.
Who's Lucy?
Oh, Michael Oliver. Yeah. All because she's on Twitter and he's not. And he can put a stop to this.
Next
he really can put a stop to this.
That's a disappointing. Like he doubled down what he said. He said, maybe I say it slightly different, but he did double down what he said. He didn't say, but by the way, don't abuse the wife of this referee. He didn't say that. Why didn't he have the decency to say that?
Yeah.
He's really gone down in my estimation. And actually, if you dig back on Buffon's career, he has bent the rules very much and he's been self-congratulatory about it. So he's not really shed himself in the best light here in the wrong part of his career.
Right, it is really disappointing. And I don't understand how you can watch that back
and not think
still
it's a penalty.
Deny it's a penalty.
Right. I think a part that gets kind of forgotten from this whole thing is Ronaldo stepping up for that header. Mm-hmm. To knock that ball down to Vasquez, that is people talk about Messi and other players and whoever you want to talk about, but no top class player right now has everything in his locker like Ronaldo does. Ronaldo, like, no one else has that leap in the 90th minute over whoever it was to knock it down to Vasquez to make that penalty happen. That is such a Ronaldo moment.
Yeah. What about Ashley Barnes?
I mean, Ashley Barnes is up there. Fellaini, Crouchy.
Fellaini doesn't jump, though.
That's he just stands. He just comes off his head. But I honestly love that.
Yep.
He battled for that ball and he knotted it down. And then the penalty is a penalty.
It was a perfect penalty.
Yeah, and then the minute
there are so many. I mean, I've said this before, but I'm really sick of players just smashing it down the middle. But Ronaldo took absolutely no chances with that. Chesney went the right way, but he had no chance.
It was perfect. It was
beautiful.
It was perfect. And the minute the penalty was given, I think I tweeted something like, "Get ready, you're about to see some abs," we did, of course.
The thing about the penalty that I found interesting was those. You know how they have that Ronaldo cam thing where they just fall. Like there was a. I don't know if you've seen the video where everyone is harassing him at that point, even his own players, and he's basically telling them, get away from me.
The Juventus players
and he's
kicking.
He's had nothing to do with them because he's concentrating on this penalty. And that's professionalism. But again, on Michael Oliver, someone said that, Buffon himself said that the brave thing to do would have been to let them play it out. Actually, the brave thing to do was to give that penalty with the last kick of the game.
Right.
And I thought that was very impressive considering no English referees going to the World
Cup. Send him to the World Cup.
also, to be fair, there was an offside goal that was ruled out for Madrid that was an offside.
Was it?
So okay. There was that. Also, if anything, the abuse Michael Alves should be getting is for those two streaks he has on the side of his head. Have you seen that?
I did not see that.
Didn't notice.
You know how Ronaldo has those two like speed streaks? You know when you're a kid and you wear like
time?
Yeah, you wear like the lightning shoes to go faster. These guys have like those two streaks in their head. He had one of those. And I don't know why. Like, is he a referee? It just bothered me.
My other problem is, all of a sudden, Juventus fans are bringing up that they should have had a penalty. And I believe they probably should have from the replays in the first leg. I'm like, why does this matter now? You didn't bring this up then when you got trounced 3-0. You bring it up now. Like,
just
let it be. You lost.
So Bayern versus Madrid.
The European Clásico.
Yeah, this one is tough because I still think Madrid are going to win the whole thing. Because that's just what they do.
I thought
you
thought Bayern when it was just
I know,
you.
But
like, what changed?
Yes,
Daniel shows up and next thing you change your mind?
No, they met Madrid. That's my issue. Like, you avoid Madrid, you win the Champions League. I just feel it's in their blood. It's in their DNA. They're going to do it again.
I'm certainly not betting against Madrid.
No, you can't bet against Madrid. Okay, here's, you know, someone says $5,000 on one of these four teams. Put it now. Put it. Who are you putting it on? Yeah, see, talk is easy. You put it on Madrid.
If it's a free bet, I'm putting it on Roma.
Yeah.
Because the odds will be...
Sure.
But the problem
is, that's a good point.
We went, no one can win it back-to-back. They did. And in my brain goes, no one can win it three times in a row. But
3-4 is close enough. Now it's going to be 4-5. Ooh. Zidane killing it.
Dan, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think you can't look past Real Madrid. And I despise them. But you just can't look past them. But I would say that when I had a few Liverpool fans saying, what do you think the best route is for them? I said Roma and then Real Madrid. I think in a one-off against Real Madrid, they'd have more of a chance than they would have in a one-off with Bayern Munich.
I think that's a reasonable point.
I agree. Because also, Bayern Munich are more complete from front to back. If you look at it, obviously, the attack, you have to go Real Madrid, Ronaldo and his bodyguard, Benzema.
Just Ronaldo.
Sure.
Yeah.
But defensively, Real Madrid have been found out so many times. And if Bayern Munich can keep this... if it's a matter if they can keep it tight.
Yeah.
If they keep it tight, Bayern Munich will go through in this, I believe.
No, I think it's a really good point. I would argue that Bayern are like tactically more sophisticated than Madrid.
Yeah.
Madrid
sure.
have their way of playing and they can change the personnel, but what they do is pretty much the same thing every time. Bayern will adapt or would adapt to Liverpool if they needed to.
Right. All right, so that's the Champions League. I'm moving on to the Europa League.
Really?
No, we're not doing that. Okay.
Move of the week.
No. All right, move of the week then.
Yeah.
All right. Happy Mumu.
One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit sleep forever. One day Mumu go wake up.
I hate Karen Brady at the best of times, but this is what I was delighted to see, that today, 15 minutes before West Ham against Stoke, she tweeted, 15 minutes until my new show, Give It A Year, starts on ITV. Hope you watch it and hope you enjoy it. First comment under that, from Jolly West Ham United FC Hammers, at Joel Saffer.
Wow.
Seriously, are you even aware that we've got a game tonight?
At the same time, telling people to not.
She's advertising her shite television program.
But what would have been more interesting? Let's be real.
Probably the television program. But that's not.
I'm telling you now. I just watched that game. It was just a wonderful mesh of calamity.
End to end.
Just beautiful.
Was it a ding dong battle?
It was a ding dong battle. Excellent. Yeah. No really well worked goals though, which is a shame. Just hoofs. But Karen Brady. She's just, you know, the Dildo brothers get a lot of stick on the ownership team there. But I think Karen Brady gets away with it quite a lot of the time. The worst thing she said was when they were still at Upton Park, the club lacked a little bit of identity.
Mm. And then she moved them into this
And then she
bowl.
Just ripped the soul out of them. And it's just an absolute embarrassment.
Brilliant. Wow. I've got one here which is VAR related, which I just feel VAR is going to give us a lot of Momo candidates. This was a game at Mainz. So 45th minute, Mainz corner, possible handball, ref says play on, blows the halftime whistle right away. The Freiburg players go down the tunnel and then the ref calls everyone back onto the field to give a penalty for that handball that VAR whatever, he got told in his ear like a minute and a half later.
That is amazing.
You should see the scenes of the players like jogging back out onto the field just to take this penalty.
What happened with the penalty?
I didn't see that. That wasn't the interesting part. I was like, this is hilarious.
I want to see the referee's reaction because he must have been like, are you joking? Yeah. Like, he just told all the players off the back. I'm going to look like a proper knob if I do this. Like, I feel sorry for the referee.
I think at that point, the referee should just let that one go.
Good point. Yeah. His wife needs to get off Twitter.
Immediately.
Yeah. Hey, well done. I just got that. Bernie.
Oh, it's me? Yeah. Okay. So there's a bear in Russia again. This is in the third division, but this bear, I think it's the same bear, guys.
Like, it is.
We need to contextualize that, which is a few years ago we had a moment where a Russian footballer, Kirill Komarov, hired a bear for his son's fifth birthday party, and there were pictures of his son riding the bear. The bear has a birthday hat on. I mean, the whole thing is a whole new level of messed up. And it looks like the same bear.
Yes, and I don't know if bears all look the same or not, whatever.
Oh, that's racist.
This bear put on a proper show, by the way. He's standing with
He earned his money. He earned his salmon or whatever they eat. Yeah.
Yeah, probably salmon.
Yeah.
Maybe the same bear from The Revenant either, but that's racist too. but this bear was with his handler. And
some dude in a leather jacket.
What we'll call
sitting and standing there going, look at my bear. He's no handler, man. He's just the dude that wasn't eaten by the bear.
One of ten dudes that wasn't eaten.
Exactly. He's the ninth guy.
Well, this guy wasn't eaten. Standing next to the bear, while the bear is clapping and trying to lead a thunderclap or something.
Yeah, like, the bear's holding the ball that. And then the referee comes over, takes the ball for... You know they always have a mascot holding the ball like a little kid?
Yeah.
This was the bear clawing on this ball.
Imagine how gently a bear has to hold a ball not to break it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the bear wasn't done. His encore actually got up on its hind legs and then started clapping.
It just does not look like a real bear. It was so weird in the video. People are like, is that a... Like, really?
He's probably because you know usually see real bears clapping and handing over footballs.
No.
I wanted to eat the handler. I'm just saying.
Well, honestly, I looked at it and I thought, that bear, there's not enough protection. There's no muzzle. There's a little rope coming off his neck, like the smallest string that you've ever seen in your life. And it was hilarious. Yeah. Anyways, is that it for Mumu?
Yeah, it was a grizzly scene.
Do we need more than that?
Alex had a pun.
Oh, please go on.
It was a wild grizzly scene.
Yeah.
Sorry about the pause before I caught that.
Hey!
Happy Mumu. One thing we are no sha, Mumu no fit live forever. One day, Mumu go wake up.
So TFC lost to the Colorado Rapids. Do we care?
No.
No.
Do they care?
No.
No one cares.
No.
They signed three players from TFC 2 just to fill out the squad for this.
Wow.
And Jason Hernandez, the old boy, got called in just for probably one night only.
Just like 0 hours contract, just like bring him in.
So as far as we're concerned, this season has not started.
No,
MLS.
Domestic.
They know that they can doss off for another like 5-6 weeks and still make the playoffs without any trouble. So
yeah,
it's fine.
So we'll go straight into the CONCACAF Champions League.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Yeah, they've done phenomenal. I mean, to open the scoring in the Azteca. Was phenomenal.
With Aztecas.
But, well, what?
Alex, stop it!
What?
So, that was incredible because the pressure was... I mean, again, they had a good score going into it. 3-1, I think it was, which was brilliant. And two of the goals from that 3-1 game were, you know, at any level, were amazing. And then to score the first goal, and Bono had a world... Talk about world-class goalkeeping performances.
Bono is... bloody amazing. I don't want him to leave Toronto FC, but if I were a European team, I would be looking at him. He's a phenomenal goalkeeper.
I can't believe he's not the US number one already.
He will be soon.
It should be undisputed.
He got into the team, right?
He got into the squad recently. I think it was when a few of the more senior members got given like a bit of time off. You know, look at themselves in the mirror and think about why they're not going to the World Cup.
He will once Greg Burney's US manager, so...
That has to happen, surely.
Yeah.
Even though I don't want it to, but surely.
I mean, if I was the US Federation or whatever they're called, I would be looking at him for sure. Although if I was him, I would, I think I've said this before, but especially if they win the CONCACAF Champions League, he'll probably want to have a go at the Club World Cup, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
But after that, if I were him, given how well he's done, I would be looking at Europe as well, especially because we know he has connections in France.
Yeah, mm. Why not go to Europe when, you know, why would you want to manage the US and manage Jeff Cameron?
Good point.
Yeah, no, that seals that.
Yeah.
So, any predictions for the Chivas game?
I don't know enough about Chivas Guadalajara to really predict anything, but I've got some information about the city itself, if you want
sure.
that.
Yeah, because are we visiting?
Well, no, but okay. You'll feel like it once you know this, right?
Great.
The city is named after the Spanish city of Guadalajara, the name of
what?
Which...
There's a Spanish Guadalajara.
The name of which comes from the Andalusian Arabic, Wadi El Hijara.
Wadi El Hijara.
That's close enough.
Which is the Valley of Stones.
Yeah, there you go.
Obviously, I know the language.
Yeah.
He's like so impressed.
I was like, did you read it off the paper?
No,
I was like, I got close enough.
Right.
Yeah. It's considered by most to be the home of mariachi music.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I don't think that's a good thing. A mariachi is really annoying.
How does it go?
How?
It's a chubby old bloke.
Yeah. It's like, mate, you know that one? Play that one.
On April 22nd, this one's not funny. Don't laugh at this, because a lot of people died. On April 22nd, 1992, gas explosions in the sewer system over 4 hours destroyed 8 kilometers of streets in downtown district of Analco.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, it's like one of those, you know, sci-fi movies where the fire just travels through the sewers, like you think.
But apparently for the week before that, like, the citizens had been like, we're really smelling gas, like, you guys should come and check it out.
Yeah.
And they did. And no evacuation.
It was just the fat mariachi blocks party.
Can we just point out how bad of a tour guide Alex would be?
Yes.
Like, before you go to the place, you want it to be all nice.
Yeah.
Alex goes, and this part of the town was just completely...
It's like you show up in London and all they talk about is the plague and the big fire. So it's like, what about that nice, big, shiny building? Nah,
yeah,
I mean, let me tell you about the plague.
I'm on vacation.
To be fair, that is what the British Museum is. It's like the plague, the fire of London, here's all the shit we stole from the...
This is why I don't own
the
museums.
Yeah, the pillaging of all the other...
Yeah, because that is a British history. We're a bunch of cocks.
Yeah, this is where we planted flags. Now hear about it.
Fine, I'll move on to something a bit more upbeat, right?
Okay.
One of the main distinguishing dishes is birria. This is goat or lamb meat cooked in a spicy sauce, seasoned with chili peppers, ginger, cumin, black pepper, oregano, and clove. And that sounds bloody delightful.
Yeah, I would have a go on that, definitely.
Yeah.
I think as far as this game goes...
well done, good
yeah.
try.
Yeah, yeah. Good effort.
Yeah.
As far as this game goes, I think this is the weakest Mexican team TFC will face. I think they are actually slight favourites for the bookmakers right now. The only concern is that through the 6 matches that Chivas have been through, they've only conceded 1 goal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one little concern there, but I hate being optimistic, but I
know.
Think TFC can do this.
But this would be insane.
Weren't Tigres the best team? Like
supposedly.
Like, supposedly the best team?
Certainly over the last 5 years. I think right now, you could say Club America are the best, but over the last 5 years, Tigres have been
But in the tournament.
The best. In the tournament, yeah.
Probably the best Mexican team.
I'm also happy that the first leg's at home. I think that's a real opportunity to get an advantage, and then we've seen that they can hold out away.
Let's hope it's cold.
It's going to be cold.
The thing about this TFC team is that they have a tactic depending on the situation. They don't just show up and do the same thing.
Oh,
we've seen it
pragmatic.
Last game. Attacked, what's her name? Last game.
Club America.
Yeah. Attacked them hard at home, got their 3-1 lead, and then went and just set up shop at the Azteca and did very well. So, yeah, I think he's got enough in him and they've got enough in this team. And they've done this all without... whatever center midfielder guy's name, I'm really bad.
Victor Vasquez.
Yeah, they've done all this without Victor Vasquez. So, you know, that only bodes well for them. And they've had a lot of injuries, too, even in that game in the Azteca. So anything's possible. And I think they have a really good chance. And I would love to see them in the Club World Cup. That would be insane.
It would be a fantastic win to be in it. But even more so, it would be fantastic if they win the CONCACAF Champions League. As we all know, you become the greatest MLS team of all time.
That is all Brady does when we talk about TFC. He's
literally. It's all I do.
Yes.
It's all I care about.
Yeah.
It's really all I care about.
I think it would be fair. I think it would be fair.
Yeah. Dan, you'll be there?
Yeah, I'll be there. And I think it's also worth noting that Chris Mavinga's been missing as well.
True.
Probably easily one of TFC's best players. But, you know, in his stead, well, not in his stead, Drewmore plays a lot of games. He was an absolute boss.
Yeah.
Especially in that second half against Club America. And more of that, and I think they'll be absolutely fine over these two legs.
Before we move on, since we're in MLS, Zlatan scored again.
Don't care.
Just a no.
Was
it's not from 50 yards, I don't care.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I
apologize.
You should be.
I apologize. I will sit the next spot out.
How disgusting would it be if he's just like, you know what? I'll go to the World Cup.
Didn't he say that though?
Yeah,
didn't
he said.
Wasn't he close to that? Wasn't he said something similar?
He's pretty much
he
up
said
for
that
it.
He, it's up to him. Is what he said.
Yeah.
Didn't he also say, "I'm really surprised that these guys did this well"? Like, he said some crazy stuff about it. But you know what? I don't. I wouldn't put it past him to go to the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, I found it annoying that Sweden beat Italy because I was like, I know Sweden are not going to be entertaining once they get there.
But
would
but
Italy?
Would they take Zlatan? I think they take Zlatan. I think they would take him now.
Probably, yeah. They probably will.
I hope not.
Just so
I hope not. But like,
just so that we don't have to know that he was right about the fact that he could just do it if he wanted to.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, let's leave it there. Dan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet?
My Twitter is Daniel J. Rouse. And that's it, otherwise don't bother me.
Fair enough. Said like Lucy Oliver. Or whatever her name is.
Hmm?
Yeah, Lucy Oliver.
Oh,
the name that Bernie just dropped, like everyone knows who that
yeah.
is. It's like Lucy Oliver on Twitter. It's like, yeah. What? Oh, right.
You just been on too much wrestling on Twitter.
That's
okay,
true. I was like, who's Lucy?
Yeah. Anyway. Bernie, thank you.
Thank you.
Mahanid.
Anytime.
All right. Yeah, you literally, you're obligated, mate.
Yeah, I'm here every week.
Exactly. We will see you next week. Take care.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.